Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The Equal Justice Initiative recently released a groundbreaking report on lynchings of African Americans in the United States and found that nearly 4,000 documented lynchings occurred between the years 1877 to 1950. While the gruesome incidents of murder are well established in our history books, the total number of African Americans lynched is about 700 higher than previously thought. But that's not all. Another grisly chapter in American history is the lynching of Mexicans. In numbers second only to African Americans, thousands of Mexicans were reportedly lynched in the late 1800s to early 1900s. With little remaining documentation, the lynchings of 547 Mexicans have been verified, but the true number stands likely much higher. My guest is William Carrigan. He's a chair and professor of history at Rowan University, author of The Making of Lynching Culture, Violence and Vigilantism in Central Texas, 1836 to 1916. Together with his collaborator Clive Webb, he's published numerous essays on the same topic, including Forgotten Dead, Mob Violence Against Mexicans in the United States, 1848 to 1928. Their op-ed in the Friday edition of the New York Times was entitled When Americans Lynched Mexicans. Welcome to Uprising.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, who exactly was being lynched? Are we talking about Mexicans who were part of a migrant workforce or Latinos who were always here, those who had long come and gone over the border for generations? Were there Central Americans who were also lynched, or were they just seen as part of the same group of people by white Americans?
That's a good question. Decided to just talk about Mexicans who were lynched because early on we discovered that they were by far the greatest Spanish-speaking group that was in fact lynched in our records. But that does not mean that there were not other Spanish speakers, in particular Chileans and Peruvians were also lynched, especially in the Gold Rush period. In terms of their nationality, early on in the middle of the 19th century, you know, all of the individuals would have been Mexican citizens at one point in time, of course. But then many were, of course, became U.S. citizens after the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. It is probably true, although the evidence is very hard to get at, but it's probably true that most of the victims of lynching were poor. Many of them laborers, which does not mean that the whites who are intent on enacting mob violence were not interested in acquiring the property of wealthier landowners, but their primary means to do so was to attack the weaker and more vulnerable laborers for these wealthier landlords.
Now, we understand the lynchings of African Americans as a legacy of the institution of slavery. There's a direct reason linked to the reasons for that horror. But what were the lynchings of Mexicans ideologically based on, if there was any basis?
Well, I guess the answer there is it's several different things. First of all, if you asked the lynchers themselves, they would have cited, and they often did, the idea that the legal system in the West was not fully functional, that the jails weren't to be trusted, and that this was frontier justice, and it was meted out not only to Mexicans but to Anglos and to others as well. And we talk about this explanation at length in our book, and our answer is yes, this is a factor, especially in, say, the early parts of the Gold Rush. You know, it would not be wise to just dismiss this justification out of hand. There were times and places where the legal system really was not functioning well, and individuals felt that the criminal threat was so great, they took the law into their own hands. Now, we don't believe that this justifies lynching, even in this case, but it should be pointed out that this was true. But very quickly, we find that this explanation continues, but the circumstances no longer warrant it. In other words, while there is some justification and truth to this justification early on, it quickly becomes a justification that is stated, but there's really other unstated motivations behind the mob violence that's taking place. And some of this is true even at the very beginning of mob violence against Mexicans. And just briefly, we emphasize economic factors. During the California Gold Rush, it's obviously the battle over mining claims in South Texas. It's the battle for control of land. And then throughout the American Southwest, there's a battle over the terms and conditions of labor that underlies a lot of anti-Mexican mob violence.
Now, were the lynchings carried out in geographically the same areas that the lynchings of African Americans were carried out, or was it more of a Southwest issue?
Yeah, it's not going to overlap very much with the geographic spread of African Americans, who are overwhelmingly lynched in the, you know, former states of the Confederacy in the South. It is true that Texas has a great number of lynchings of African Americans and of Mexicans, but even within Texas, there's going to be some geographic differences there, where most Mexicans were going to be lynched in South Texas and most African Americans in East Texas.
Right. Now you mentioned mining rights and economic factors as motivating these murders. But what about sort of collective punishment against Mexicans for speaking their language, for expressing their culture? Because there are signs from the period, no Spanish speakers or Mexicans allowed, whites only. Was this also a cultural imperialist issue, if you will?
Well, I think that we do emphasize racism and prejudice as a very critical factor. Essentially, our argument works like this. Even if there are economic reasons for attacking a certain group, it's not something that necessarily inevitably happens. There were French and English and right. Irish gold seekers as well, and they were not attacked in the same level and degree as were Mexicans. Mexicans were disproportionately targeted by mobs. And we argue that the reason is because of the deep-rooted anti-Mexican sentiments held by many whites. It was easier to talk oneself into lynching a Mexican than it was into, say, lynching a French gold miner.
Now, the lynchings of black men were these horrific spectacles, as the Equal Justice Initiative and others have pointed out, with hundreds or thousands of people gathering with a picnic-like atmosphere in some cases, whole families, children present. Were there similar circumstances for lynchings of Mexicans as well?
There certainly were. The short answer is yes. There were episodes of lynchings of Mexicans in which, you know, crowds in the thousands viewed the execution, in which there was dismemberment and mutilation of the corpse. But I think it should be pointed out that compared to African Americans, the number of these cases is far smaller. The reasons for that are probably multiple, but I think the most important one is that there are chronological differences between the lynchings of the two groups. Most lynchings of Mexicans took place in the 19th century, with a very violent outburst in the second decade of the 20th century. But many of the spectacle lynchings of African Americans are very late 19th and then early 20th century. And relatively speaking, most of the violence against Mexicans had occurred earlier than that. And that leads to different densities of population. It's also true that, of course, the West, even in the early 20th century, had a different density of population than did the South. And of course, if you're looking to try to amass 10,000 spectators, it's much easier to do that
right.
In some places than others.
Now, in your op-ed, you cited how in November 1873, seven Mexican shepherds were hanged by white vigilantes near Corpus Christi, Texas. And just as an example of, you know, these sorts of horrific incidents, can you tell our listeners and our viewers this story so that we can get a better picture of how this history unfolded?
Absolutely. So this case was one that the local media relatively ignored. We discovered this case through the investigation of the Mexican government. What happened was that there was a wealthy landowner named Toribio Lozano. He owned property in both Mexico and in Texas, of course, before the U.S.-Mexican War, the property probably conjoined. And he was living in Mexico when he received a telegram that every one of his employees on a ranch in Texas that he owned had been had been killed. They were, in fact, found hanged all from trees near one another on his property. They had been shepherds that he had been employing to tend his flock. And he immediately came to Texas and investigated, and he concluded that the intent of the violence was to intimidate him into selling his property. And we believe that this case is, in fact, a good example of one of the consequences of anti-Mexican mob violence in South Texas, which was to intimidate Mexicans into abandoning South Texas, returning to Mexico. There were a number of whites, of course, in South Texas that opposed this violence, and it's always a, it's hard to tell a complicated story sometimes, but there were whites in South Texas who wanted to ally with Mexicans and wanted them there, both as fellow landowners. They intermarried sometimes into their families. But then there were some whites who believed that Texas should be only for whites and wanted to chase all Mexicans out.
Right. Well, and of course, we see echoes of that today, even if the lynchings aren't happening. And I want to ask you about that in just a few minutes. But why did these lynchings eventually stop? You brought up the Mexican government. Did the Mexican government play a role?
Yeah, there are probably many factors, but the one that my co-author and I emphasize in our book is the role of the Mexican government. It's one of the things that's a difference between the African American case and the Mexican case. African Americans did not have the resources that Mexicans did to protest. One, Mexicans could, in fact, flee to Mexico across the border and provide some safety there. And then second, they could appeal to the Mexican government for intervention if they were Mexican nationals. The Mexican government, and of course, the stability of the Mexican government waned and waxed over time. But overall, we believe that the persistent diplomatic protest by Mexican officials eventually had a cumulative impact on things in the Southwest. Particularly by the 1890s, these diplomats finally succeeded in getting the U.S. federal government to pay indemnities to the families of lynching victims. And then from that point forward, the federal government, much more so than in the case of blacks, cared about the lynching of Mexicans. And it was something that eventually the federal government, by the 1920s, actually intervened and actually ended up prosecuting and sending to jail a Anglo sheriff who had lynched Mexicans under his control.
Well, finally, why is this history so little known, and how important is it to have this historical context when we see sort of ongoing, very negative discourse against Mexicans and Central Americans and other Spanish-speaking communities today?
Yeah, I absolutely. I think it's important for kind of our ongoing civic debate. I think there's two things. Mexicans and Anglo Americans, white Americans don't remember the past in the same way, and this makes conversation and dialogue about current politics very tricky. Whites are largely unaware of this violence against Mexicans and don't understand when Mexicans kind of put modern day anti-Mexican nativism and violence into this historical context. And likewise, sometimes people will say that they believe that the violence that is taking place along the border is similar to lynching, and of course, we believe that there are some differences between what happened in the past and what happens in the present.
Finally, where can listeners and viewers get a hold of your work? You have a book out. Is there a website you can recommend if they want to learn more about this history and maybe shocked to hear about it?
Well, yes, certainly our book that was published by Oxford is the key source I would recommend individuals to. We also have a Facebook page, Facebook/Forgotten Dead. Oxford University Press also has our book and information about it on their website.
That's facebook.com/forgottendead. And of course, there's also the New York Times op-ed on Friday that you and your collaborator put out. And I should mention your collaborator is British and is also studying this from another part of the world. And that must be an interesting experience for him to see this part of U.S. history.
Absolutely. He brings us a different perspective than maybe perhaps an American might, and I think it's enriched our study, kind of a perception of an outsider.
Well, William Carrigan, I want to wish you the best of luck and thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your time.
William Carrigan is my guest. He is the chair and professor of history at Rowan University, and together with his collaborator Clive Webb, he's published numerous essays on the topic of lynchings of Mexicans. And his book includes the making of a lynching. His books include the making of a lynching culture, violence, and vigilantism in Central Texas, 1836 to 1916, and also Forgotten Dead: Mob Violence Against Mexicans in the United States, 1848 to 1928. The op-ed in the Friday edition of the New York Times was entitled When Americans Lynched Mexicans. This is Uprising. Bipasha Shom is our senior producer. Anna Buss is our assistant producer. Jennifer McMartin is our research intern. Alexander Hobbs is our technical director. Christian Beck is our production assistant. Federico Garcia, Kiana Turner, and Jonathan Alexander are our audio engineers. Camilo Ramirez is our sound editor. Annie Mendoza is our social media coordinator. Our website is uprisingwithsonali.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host and executive producer of Uprising.